We were discussing yesterday, B, under the patriarchal period, the authenticity of the patriarchal accounts. And the main point of interest there was the light that archaeological research has thrown on the patriarchal period. And as a result, there's a much greater tendency to accept those narratives as historical than there was, say, 50 years ago. I think we can say that, to pick up, right at the end of the hour, I quoted from John Bright's book, History of Israel, about nomenclature, that the nomenclature that you find in the patriarchal narratives fits precisely that period of Israel's history, not later periods. And I think we can say that the kind of material that you find in the patriarchal narratives is of the type that could not have been invented by later writers and then represented as being early when it was actually late, because of things like nomenclature, which would be very hard if you were living 1,000 years later to know what the nomenclature was in the time of the patriarchal period. Now that doesn't mean that archaeology has proved that the patriarchal stories occurred just as the Bible tells them. That goes beyond, I think, what the results of archaeological research can do at this point with the patriarchal stories. But certainly as far as general historicity, it's done a lot. Let's go on to C, which is the chronology of the patriarchs. You notice there are three subpoints there: the biblical data, the difficulties, and then a summary. You read the section in Schultz already on the patriarchal period and the chronology of the patriarchs. Page 30 of Schultz. Schultz says, the chronology for the patriarchs still remains a moot point. Within this general period, the date advocated for Abraham varies from the 21st to the 15th century. Now, Schultz himself, I've mentioned this earlier, in a previous edition of his book, argued for the early part of the 19th century, but he's backed off that in the last edition, the third edition, and puts it, I believe, at 2091, which is what he favors to be the 22nd century, 21st century, 2091. But you notice what he says. The dates vary from the 21st to the 15th century. That's a 600-year span. Now, most people fit back around 2100. But there is a wide variation. The question is, why? Well, let's look at the biblical data. That's A, or 1. If you're going to get at the chronology of the patriarchs, you have to start from a later time. In other words, you have to start from the kingdom period. The points where we get Old Testament chronology generally are by linking certain things in the kingdom period with Assyrian and Egyptian chronology. And you can do that in the kingdom period. And then you've got the synchronized chronology of the reigns of the kings. And you work from the fixed points back to the earlier time. So as far as the date of the patriarchs is concerned, the first thing you have to look at is 1 Kings 6:1. You read about this in McRae's volume in connection with the date of the Exodus, because 1 Kings 6:1 says that in the fourth year of Solomon's reign, the temple was begun to be built. And that was 480 years from the Exodus. So what you can get from that is that the fourth year of Solomon's reign was 480 years after the Exodus. So you can pinpoint what the date of the fourth year of Solomon's reign is, and you add 480 years, and you're back to the date of the Exodus. To just jump ahead, the fourth year of Solomon's reign is 966. Not much controversy about that. So So you add 480 to that, you get 1446 for the day of the Exodus. But that's where you start. 480 years between the Exodus and the building of Solomon's temple. Then you move to Exodus 12:40, where you read, "Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years." So you move 430 years further back. That's the time Israel was in Egypt, from Exodus 12:40. Then you go to Genesis 47:9, where you read, "Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. If not attained to the days of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." So Jacob says, at the point when he went down into Egypt, that he was 130 years old. So, you know, 480 years from Solomon back to the Exodus, 430 years in Egypt. And Jacob was already 130 years old when he came into Egypt. Genesis 25:26, it's the next reference. Where you read, "After that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel. His name was called Jacob. Isaac was 80 years old when she bore them." So at the birth of Jacob, he was 130 years old when he went to Egypt. But at his birth, Isaac was 60 years old. So you can move another 60 years back, Isaac's age before Esau and Jacob were born. Then Genesis 21:5. "Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him." That's Genesis 21:5. So Abraham's age before the birth of Isaac was 100 years. Now, you can note in this connection, because this will become important later, if you compare that with Genesis 12:4, in Genesis 12:4, you read, "Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken unto him. Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran." So when Abraham left Haran to come down to the land of Canaan, he was 75. It wasn't until 25 years later, when he was 100, that Isaac was born. But the patriarchal period in Canaan really began 25 years prior to the birth of Isaac, when Abraham was 75 years old. Now, if you add the 480, the 430, 130, 60, and 100, come out to 1,200 years. That 1,200 years, then, is the time between Abraham's birth and the fourth year of Solomon's reign. 1,200 years between Abraham's birth and the fourth year of Solomon's reign. Now notice, because I'm going to come back to this later, the patriarchs were in Canaan before Jacob's going to Egypt, 215 years. You get that by adding the 130 of the age of Jacob when he went down to Egypt, the 60 years of Isaac before the birth of Jacob, and the 25 years of Abraham in Canaan. So, the patriarchs were in Canaan 215 years before Jacob went to Egypt. 25 for Abraham, 60 for Isaac, 130 for Jacob. All right, putting that together, the fourth year of Solomon's reign is 966. You add the 1,200 to that. It gives you 2166 for the year of Abraham's birth. You subtract the 75, his age when he left Haran, that means 2091 is the beginning of the patriarchal period in Canaan. So we would say the patriarchal period, at least in Canaan, is 2091 to 1876. That's the 2091 minus the 215 where they were in Canaan before they went to Egypt, before Jacob went to Egypt. So that'd be 2091 to 1876. 1876 would be the date they went down into Egypt. Israel was in Egypt 1876 to 1446. That's the 430 years of Exodus 1240. Now, that seems rather cut and dry and clear. Yet Schultz said the dating of the patriarchs is still a moot point. What's the problem? What's moot about that? So let's go on to number two, the difficulties. Yes? Here? Because the 75 years is the age of Abraham when he left Haran. 75. That's Genesis 12:4. He was 75 years old when he left Haran. So 2166 would be the date of his birth. He was 75 when he left Haran, so 2091 would be the beginning of the patriarchal period in Canaan. Yes?
The ages of Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham are all rounded off. They seem rounded off. I know that doesn't change anything at all, but is there any history or anything that was done throughout it all?
It may well have been. I don't think we can
it's
say.
Not important.
No, we don't know. I don't think that. Let me just say, preface what I'm going to say. I don't think it has anything to do with reliability of scripture, inerrancy, or anything of the kind. But we don't know the methodology that was used to keep these chronological records.
Yeah.
Maybe people just generally kept round number figures, and if that's the case, that could be what is inserted here in accordance with the system that was used. There's no way to establish that, I don't think. The same way when you get to the book of Judges, you get 40 years of rest and then 40 years of oppression, or sometimes 80 years, or sometimes 20. Sometimes it's half the 40, sometimes it's double the 40. And then you begin to wonder, is there some kind of schematic there that was used in that time? Or are we to take that as precise chronological data? It seems that the 40, 20, 80 thing occurs so many times. There are stranger coincidences than that happen. But it seems it occurs so many times that there may be some kind of schematic involved. Which leads right into the next comment. What are the difficulties? Why isn't this firm? Patriarchs 2091, Abraham went into Canaan. Well, there are really two problems. They have to do with these first two citations, 1 Kings 6:1 and Exodus 12:40. I'm not going to discuss the 1 Kings 6:1 in any detail now because we will do that when we get to the date of the Exodus. But it's difficult to specify with certainty the date of the Exodus in relation to both biblical data and extra-biblical data. It is a real tough problem. The details of that are so complex that I don't want to enter into this discussion. I just want to say at this point something probably you already know, that there are two different viewpoints on the date of the Exodus, so-called early date, late date view. The early date is 1446, which follows this 480 from 966. The late date is about 1290. Now, how's the late date view deal with 1 Kings 6:1? Gets back to the schematic figure thing. There are various approaches to what kind of a schematic it is. The most general one is 12 generations of 40 years each. Actual generations are less, so you get a compression. But if there is something like that working here, then you can't simply put the 480 on top of the 966 and come up with 1446. But without getting into all the details of that at this point, that is one of the variables. Because however you come down on the date of the Exodus is going to determine, to the extent that you move it, the date of the patriarchs. Because you're working backwards into the patriarchal period. So if you have an early date for the Exodus, it's going to mean an earlier date for the patriarchs. You have a later date for the Exodus, it's going to mean a later date for the patriarchs. So that's a variable. And the date of the Exodus is one of the questions involved that makes the date of the patriarchs more difficult question.
Is there any didn't have an accurate means of measuring time in those days. And it does seem to me as though the chronology is something with which we are more concerned than they were. They do not seem to be so concerned about years and months and things.
Well, I think in general that's true. Obviously, the whole question of the day of the Exodus could easily have been solved if God chose to do so by simply naming the Pharaoh the oppression. His name's never given, it's just Pharaoh. The name isn't given. Or additional chronological information. So it doesn't seem at certain points to be important. But at other points, it does seem to be quite a bit of interest. If you look through the book of Numbers, there's a lot of chronological data in the book of Numbers. And then you look at 1 and 2 Kings, you have that synchronized chronology of the north and the south, and there seems to be a fair amount of interest in chronology there, too. Again, the question of the methodology of how it was done is quite different than ours. And you get into questions of how you count the initial year, is it the time of the accession, or is it a regnal year, a number of variances. How do you count co-regencies? Is that part of the length of the reign, or isn't it part of the reign? And you're going to do a reading assignment on this second semester. But there does seem to be a real interest in chronology there. But the systems were quite different than our systems. So that's part of the problem. The second one is Exodus 12:40, which I read for you. Exodus 12:40 says, "Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. But the question is, there's a textual problem at that point. The Septuagint says that the sojourning of the children of Israel, while they sojourned in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan, was 430 years. The sojourning of the children of Israel, while they sojourned in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan, was 430 years. Now you see what that does. It lumps together the patriarchs in Canaan plus the time in Egypt as being 430 years. Now we know from this that they were in Canaan 215 years. That's why I called your attention to that earlier. If they were in Canaan 215 years and the total is 430, then they were in Egypt 215 years instead of 430. It's cut in half, exactly in half. So that's the other variable. Which do you follow? Do you follow the Masoretic text in its rendering of 430 years in Egypt, or do you follow the Septuagint, which really gives you 215 years in Egypt, because the 430 is both in Canaan and in Egypt? Now, I do want to discuss that one, that question. Was the sojourn in Egypt 430 years or 215 years? Let's first look at arguments for the 430 years. In other words, arguments that would follow the Masoretic text rendering. I think arguments along that line, first of all, it is the Masoretic text. That is the Hebrew text. And generally, you prefer the Masoretic text over Septuagint. Not 100%. Sometimes Septuagint seems to have better reading. But as a general rule, the Masoretic text is to be preferred because it is the Hebrew text. In addition, Genesis 15:13. Remember, God made promises to Abraham in Genesis 15. And you read in verse 13, He said, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a sojourner in a land that is not theirs. They shall serve them, they shall afflict them 400 years. So the Lord says to Abraham, your seed are going to be in a land that's not their own and be afflicted for 400 years. Now that seems to be a round number. Get back into this method of chronology. It seems to be a round number, but it's much closer to the 430 than it is to the 215. It could very well be taken as a round number for the 430 years. In verse 16 of that same chapter, another term is used. Genesis 15:16, in the fourth generation they shall come here again. Now, the Hebrew term there is Gomer. Translated generation. See, that's a different term than like, these are the generations of, that phrase that occurs through Genesis where it's Toledot. It's a different term. It's Dor. Four generations. That seems to correspond to verse, verse 13, where it says 400 years. In other words, each generation is 100 years. Four generations. On your bibliography, I think there's an entry by K.A. Kitchen, down toward the bottom of page 12. Ancient Orient and Old Testament. You might recommend this book. It's full of a lot of useful information. Ancient Orient and Old Testament. Page 54, note 99, he says, Abraham, oh, the snow's coming in. Well, we're going to roast. He says, Abraham is told that his descendants will re-enter Canaan in the fourth generation, Hebrew Dor. The simplest explanation is that the four Dor corresponds to the 400 years, not to generations in the modern sense. Modern sense, what's a generation? 25 years. This is suggested not by a mere wish for harmonization, but by perfectly clear evidence from Ugaritic and early Assyrian sources that Dor or Daru can mean a span or cycle of time of 80 years or more. In other words, the same term in other cognate Semitic languages is demonstrated to mean 80 years or more. So the four generations, 400 years. It's exactly what it was with Abraham. Isaac was born when Abraham was 100 years old. Acts 7:6-7, which is really a quotation of Genesis 15. Acts 7 says, God spoke in this way that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, that they should bring them again into bondage. He'll treat them 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, and so forth. One last consideration for the 400 years is population increase. Jacob's family, that initially went down into Egypt, at the time of the Exodus, had expanded to rather large numbers. Now, we're going to discuss those numbers of the book of Numbers in some detail, too. I don't want to try to play one end of the thing off against the other. The figure that's given is 600 and some thousand fighting men over 20 years of age, which would extrapolate into 2 or 3 million people. It's much easier to fit the multiplication of Israelites into a 430-year period than it is into a 215-year period. The other entry there at the bottom of page 12 is Leon Wood, A Survey of Israel's History, page 85. He says, that you have 82 individuals from whom resulted the approximately 2 million. It may be that to these 82 should be added numerous servants whose descendants would also have come to be counted as Israelites in time. How many servants Jacob's family had is not known. But even if as many as 2,000 total persons are conjectured, the increase to reach 2 million is still 1,000 times. Never in history otherwise has anything like this rate of growth transpired, even if we think in terms of 430 years for the time involved. in the footnote, he says, speaking comparably, if Israelites had continued to multiply 1,000 times each succeeding 430 years, they would have numbered 2 billion by the time of David, 2 trillion by the captivity, and over 2 quadrillion by the time of Christ. So, of course, you get a mathematical progression and that kind of thing. But he does say, mathematically, this increase in 430 years is possible under the Lord's blessing, the birth rate being kept high, the death rate low. However, the same can hardly be said for 213 years. See, that's his point. So that the population growth is an argument for the longer period of Egypt rather than the shorter period of Egypt. Now, the way that can mathematically be worked out, you can find in Franz Delitzsch on your bibliography there, pages 28 and 29, in volume 2 of his commentary on the Pentateuch. If we follow 1 Chronicles 7:20, where 10 or 11 generations are mentioned between Ephraim and Joshua, reckon 40 years as a generation, the 10th generation of the 41 grandsons of Jacob would be born about the year 400 of the sojourn in Egypt, therefore be over 20 years of age at the time of Exodus. Let's us assume, on an average, there were 3 sons, 3 daughters to every married couple. In the first 6 of these generations, 2 sons, 2 daughters, in the last 4, and we will find that in the 10th generation, there would be 478,224 sons, about the 400th year of the sojourn, who would therefore be above 20 years of age at the time of the Exodus, while 125,326 men of the 9th generation would still be living, so there would be the 478 plus 125,000, or 603,550 men. Now, I don't expect you to pick all that up, but if you're interested in that kind of calculation, just refer you to that source where Delitzsch has tried to work out how it's possible for that number of increase to have occurred in 430 years. Now, let me just say at this point, and I don't like to say this without discussing the whole issue. We'll do that later. I think that there are some problems of understanding terminology in the census figures of Numbers chapter 1 that could perhaps modify your conclusion about the total of the population. And there are a number of reasons for that in the biblical text. So I think there were a substantial number of Israelites. Whether there were 2 or 3 million, I'm not certain of that. But I don't want to get into the details of that at this point. But in any case, there certainly is more time for increase in size during the time of 430 years rather than 215 years. Question?
Sir, so it doesn't time exactly because we're talking about generations.
Yeah.
About ages of people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to read
that's right.
Here at this time in the book of Genesis. I have a little confusion because when the 3 visitors came to Abraham and Sarah, you know, Sarah was laughing because of her age. Child. But yet it was right before that when Abimelech still apparently found her very attractive.
All right.
And yet Abraham lived to be 175.
Yeah.
And then here in this year summary that you gave us, we've got Jacob being 130 years old when he goes to Egypt. So,
yeah.
I remember one time looking at this with a contemporary mindset. You know, well, yes, she was pretty old.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I can answer that in any precise way.
I think the ages seem to still be long compared to today, but not near the extent that they were before the flood.
That's right. And a woman can certainly still be attractive beyond the period of menopause. I mean, it seems to me that's the issue. But that period would certainly be later in life than, at least reasonably so, than the you would expect it to be today because the life term generally is greater than. So I don't really see much else to say than that she, even though she was beyond the time of childbearing, could still have been a very attractive woman. We'll come back, we'll discuss those passages. I don't know that I'll throw much more light than that on. All right, let's look at evidence for 215 years. I'm not going to get very far. And Galatians 3:17 is a problem text. You read there, it's a familiar text. I say this, that the covenant that was confirmed before God in Christ, the law, which was 430 years after, cannot annul, that it should make the promise of no effect. The law, 430 years after the covenant. Covenant in the context, just before that, you're talking about Abraham. Was the law 430 years after Abraham? It was. That's 215 years in Canaan, 215 years in Egypt. And of course, those who argue for the 215-year period appeal to this text and say that Paul was following the Septuagint text, and the Septuagint is to be preferred. But the implication of 430 years in Galatians 3:17 is that the whole of the patriarchal period and the time in Egypt was 430 years. In this new Scofield Bible, there's a note at Exodus 12:41, which reads, "This period of time probably began with the descent of Abraham into Egypt." Compare Genesis 12:10, 1 Kings 6:1. So, the 430 years in the note in the New Scofield is beginning with early in Abraham's time in Canaan. Shortly after he came into Canaan, went down into Egypt. Now, response to that, by those who take the 430 years, I think there's a twofold way to respond. One way is to say that the covenant with Abraham is the covenant that's in view, but that covenant was renewed with Isaac and it was renewed with Jacob. And it was renewed with Jacob shortly before he went down into Egypt. If you look at Genesis 46, you read there, in verse 3, "And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." It's right at the point when Jacob is about to depart to go into Egypt. And that promise that had been given to Abraham is reaffirmed to Jacob right before his departure. Prior in Jacob's life, in 35:9 to 15, you read, "God appeared to Jacob when he came out of Padan Aram, blessed him. God said unto them, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not anymore be called Jacob, but Israel. And God said, be fruitful, multiply, a nation and a company of nations shall be of thee. Kings shall come out of thy loins, and the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac to thee, I will give it to thy seed after thee, while I give the land," so forth. Again, repetition of those promises that have been initially given to Abraham, repeated to Isaac, ultimately repeated to Jacob. So that's one possible way of getting that the 430 years is still to be dated from the time of Jacob's descent into Egypt, and the promise is the promise to Abraham reaffirmed to Jacob. There's another way to get at it, but my time's up, so we'll pick up here our next hour.